On February 26th, we're convening a live town hall on school diversity in Montgomery County. In advance of that conversation, we're diving into education issues across the region. First up, school redistricting in Arlington County. Facing record population growth and the overcrowded schools that has created, Arlington is in the midst of a major school boundary redesign process. Elementary schools in Arlington have struggled with overcrowding for almost a decade, with most schools operating 9% above capacity. This fall, about 700 Arlington public school students will be shuffled to new schools, and another round of redistricting is planned for fall of 2020. So what has the redistricting process been like, and now that the new elementary school boundaries have been announced, how is the community preparing for these changes? Joining me in studio to discuss are Dr. Patrick Murphy, Superintendent of Arlington Public Schools. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Kathleen Coulomb, Vice President of Communications for the Drew Model School PTA. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Megan Haydaz, former Vice President of the Patrick Henry Elementary School PTA and Chair of the Fleet Elementary School Design Committee. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Pat, this latest phase of redistricting is not a one-off task. These efforts for redistricting Arlington schools started back in 2012. Could you tell us about the bigger picture here and what precipitated it?
Sure. Looking back and thinking about a little bit of context for some of your listeners, Arlington is 26 square miles. So it is a relatively small community, and I think we're a very fortunate community. We have a strong base of our community that believes in public education and supports it pretty consistently. And I think we have all of our schools excel. We have wonderful leaders in our principals, as well as great teachers in our classrooms. And so you see that kind of reflect out across the district in a number of ways: graduation rates, students moving on to post-secondary experiences. Also, the different, rankings that are out there as far as how they see the school district and how it performs. And I think it really gets down to meeting the individual needs of the students. But we're growing. That popularity has resulted in the fact that more and more families are moving to Arlington. And we've been seeing an average of about 800 additional students each year at the start of the school year for about the last 10 years. And that was going through a period of time where enrollment had been relatively flat, but our most recent projections have come out and we're continuing to see that growth. So if you think about it this way, which I think illustrates it, we are having cohorts of seniors in our school division of about 1,400 or 1,500 exit. We're having cohorts of kindergartners coming in of about 2,100, 2,200 students. So you're seeing this sort of bubble moving through the district. And those cohorts right now of about 2,100, 2,200 are in the fifth and sixth grade. And you've got these larger cohorts also of seniors moving out, but they're gradually pushing up toward that number. So we've had to do something. We've had to recognize how can we make some adjustments with our boundaries. We've also brought new schools on, and we're continuing to add schools to our complement of schools that are out there. So how do we utilize our space and also recognize that we have one of the smaller class sizes in the metro region?
Was there any criteria or data used to determine how the new boundaries are being drawn?
Well, when this started, and actually it started when I came in, we looked at a variety of different ways that we could use relocatables, we could reconfigure space, we could also add space, and then also looked at adding additional buildings. There were a criteria, or I won't say criteria, considerations that the board used in looking at what adjustments they needed to make and how those adjustments were brought about.
Pat, the elementary school boundaries are key, since those are the start of school feeder patterns as you describe the different cohorts coming through the school. On December 6th, the school board approved your recommendations on elementary school boundaries. I have a map here with me. Why were these boundaries your recommended plan?
We did break the boundary process into two parts with the elementary, and that is because we were bringing new schools on and making some adjustments. We've got the Fleet Elementary School that's opening up. We're also expanding the Drew Model neighborhood school. And we are also then moving one of the programs that was at Drew to the Patrick Henry building, and that's the Montessori program. So based on those shifts and those moves and where we're seeing the greatest amount of growth, that's what brought about those recommendations. And I will say it was an iterative process in the sense that the staff brought out recommendations. We worked through a lot of that with the community. We also got input from the board as we were moving through that. And that's then how we arrived at the recommendations that you have in front of you.
There were a number of iterations for the proposed redistricting plans. Could you tell us about that process and why those revisions were necessary?
I think it demonstrates that we want to be transparent. It also demonstrates that we're listening. And I also think that as we bring that information out, we get additional input and insights that maybe staff didn't have on the ground awareness about. And so then we are able to better address those things. I also think working with our principals and keeping, how communities are kept together is also an important part of how we are able to move forward. There is an affinity, I will say, and we've heard from parents about this, that they like their neighborhood schools at the elementary level. They want to be able to walk. They want to be able to, have that community feeling. Things change a little bit at the middle and the high school level. But so we were listening to that, and we were addressing that as we kind of came forward with that final recommendation.
Megan, you were one of the parents in one of the affected catchments at Patrick Henry Elementary School. Do you think the new boundaries accurately reflect the criteria and goals that were set out in the process?
One of the issues that my community had with the ultimate boundary decision is that we felt there are 6 boundary considerations that the school board used to evaluate their decision, and there's really no uniform process for a practical application of those criteria to the boundary process. So it leads to a very subjective interpretation of the criteria by the individual school board members who can prioritize one or two criteria over the others at their whim. And school board members may not even agree with one another on how to apply those criteria. So we also felt there was not so much transparency into why, one proposal would come out and then it would change to the next iteration. And particularly in some cases, it did not seem that the data for the criteria supported the change to the new proposal. So those are some of our issues.
obviously there's no way to make everyone happy, but how well do you feel the public's input was taken into account during sort of the process the superintendent outlines? And is there anything you would do differently?
I think part of the problem with the process is if we could have a more objective process that didn't take into account so much the public's opinion, it would be easier to justify these boundary changes, because there are certain communities that have a lot of resources, be it media, data research and calculation, statistics, that kind of stuff that other communities may not have access to. And so those communities often are more vocal and they're louder and they're more heard than some of the other communities are. So I think that that's a really subjective way to kind of evaluate, what to do in a situation like this. I think you need to really go back to the data and what supports the best change for everyone.
Kathleen, you are in the PTA at Drew Model School, which is another one of the schools affected by the redistricting, and they've got some big changes coming their way. Could you tell us how the redistricting is affecting your school's community?
Well, first, I have a third grader at Drew. This was his first year. We actually picked Drew when he transferred in, so it was a very intentional decision, knowing that there was going to be some changes made, but also having a lot of confidence in the principal. So I'm newly appointed to the Drew PTA. It's a group that's come together within the past, 6 to 8 months, given some of the changes going on. Like Patrick mentioned, Montessori will be moving out, and that is a big bulk of the community at Drew. So we're really left with trying to get the current parents involved and then looking forward to getting some of the new families involved. And so, as you can imagine, it's quite an undertaking. But that said, and given how whatever your feelings were on the process or how it shook out, what's been amazing to me is parents that are going to be coming to Drew have reached out. I know my neighborhood was particularly active in the boundary process. But what was interesting was you might have seen a lot of contention online, or, you know, you're talking to someone at the supermarket and that's all they're talking about. But a lot of outreach from parents from whether it's Patrick Henry, Abington, some of the other neighborhoods throughout this process, trying to talk about it and find common ground. And then now that some of those families are going to move over, really trying to find ways to get to know each other. So the PTA, of course, is working closely with Principal Graves, the Drew principal. There's several different information sessions that are really engagement sessions on a variety of topics that will occur. They've already begun this month. Those will occur for the next several months. There's a lot of meet and greets, both that the PTA will put on, but also what's interesting is there's been a groundswell of just the parents inviting other parents over to their house. So those will take place and just trying to get to know each other. Our kids are going to be going to school together. So, you know, the process was contentious at times, but I think we're looking, everyone's looking forward at this point.
Kathleen, you used the term community school to describe the Drew Model School. Could you talk a little bit about what the school was before and what it will become as part of redistricting?
We're in an interesting part of the Knott community. Prior, parents could option to go to Hoffman Boston or could go to Drew Model. And that really created, you know, Drew was in a pickle. There were some families that would option to go to that school, but also Montessori was in there. So that created, I think that was the bulk of the student body. So you really didn't have the feeling of a neighborhood school. So it's somewhat disjointed at this point. In my neighborhood, there's two buses that pick up at the same time that go to two different schools. So it's a challenge to really, you know, you want to have play dates on the weekends and your kids to play outside with their classmates, but we're not there yet. And so we're looking to, you know, when your kids go out to play, they're going to be playing with some of their classmates and they're going to be on the same bus and you're going to get to know those parents. And so really there's going to be quite a shift to really make Drew kind of at the center of this neighborhood where it was never before.
We've got a call from Gary in Arlington, Virginia. Gary, you're on the line.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
The reason I called was I'm related to a seventh grader at Jefferson Middle School. And what will happen to her is that next year she will go to Dunstan, and the next year Dunstan. In the past, I thought policy was when the school district needed to make shifts like this, if you were 12 years old and in a middle school, they didn't want to take you out of that middle school at that age and make you go to a new school, which in this case will be away from her friends and everything else. They were always grandparented in, and then the next class would, you know, the boundary shifts would take effect for. I'm just curious what the thinking was in this upheaval this is causing this time.
That sounds like a question for Dr. Pat Murphy, Superintendent of Arlington Public Schools.
You know, why don't you reach out and we'll speak about that specifically. I need to know a little bit more of the background on that and the details. So I think that may be the best avenue for you to take with us at this point in time. And we'll get some folks to work with you on that.
All right. We'll continue our conversation about redistricting in Arlington after a short break. Stay tuned.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
You're tuned into the Kojo Nambi Show. I'm Dan Reed of Greater Greater Washington, sitting in for Kojo. We're talking about redistricting in Arlington. We've got a call from Dima in Arlington, Virginia. Dima, you're on the line.
Yes. I wanted to talk about one of the criteria for decision-making should be the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Basically, we can't satisfy everyone, and there's always going to be people who are complaining about their particular needs. But what we need to do is to try to find a way to satisfy the greatest number of people. And in one particular situation, I would like to talk about we can't leave a single neighborhood without a neighborhood school. We have the Clarendon to Roslyn area right now without a dedicated neighborhood school, and that is one of the things that we need to achieve. We can't leave a whole big area like that without a dedicated school. But in general, you know, I really want to get to that criteria of the decision-making process being the greatest good for the greatest number of people.
Thank you. Dr. Pat Murphy, you're the superintendent of Arlington Public Schools. How do you respond to a question like that?
So, Dan, I know we've been using the term loosely this morning, and I do want to kind of back us up here just a little bit. The board policy has these considerations, and it's a holistic look at a number of those different considerations. So I know that the community at times and folks have said, you know, let's make this very straightforward. Let's strictly base this on this stark criteria. And we've, you know, we've taken into a whole host of different things into considerations. And I think that's the point the caller makes right on target, is that our schools are not sometimes ideally located where the greatest degree of our population of students are. And so we've had to make some adjustments. Remember, many of these schools have been in place for over 50 years. And so neighborhoods have changed. The patterns of housing have changed as well. And so I think we need to take all of that into our thinking and how we, you know, come down with these decisions. The other piece is, the caller makes this point and it's right on target. Neighborhoods want their neighborhood schools. And I think that's ultimately what we're attempting to do here, is to bring back that flavor and that feeling so folks can walk to their schools and they have that school as a community center, which I think is so important, especially for young kids.
You know, another consideration that parents have brought up is that higher poverty schools have larger opportunity gaps than schools with a smaller cohort of students, like getting free or reduced lunch. And they presented national statistics saying that, you know, if a school has a high number of heavily impacted students, it'll put a strain on the resources at that school. You know, how do you respond to that assessment?
Well, we have eight schools that have the Title I designation in Arlington. And as a result of that...
Could you describe what Title I means?
They receive additional federal funding, state and federal funding. And so a lot of those schools are resourced differently as a result of that. So the resources are there. And I know the district also provides resources that really show up in our class sizes and the types of teachers we have in our classrooms and how ultimately our students are served. So I think we take that all into consideration. I think also in looking at the recommendation that we came forward with, we tried to create a balance there. We have sort of a range of schools with free and reduced lunch, and I think those recommendations took that into consideration.
Kathleen, this fall, 55% of the students at your school, Drew Model, will be receiving free and reduced lunches, which is slightly higher than the current number this year, 52%. Are you and your fellow parents concerned about that creating an opportunity gap at your school?
I think we always pay attention to that number, but I think you can't look at it in a vacuum. I mean, there's a lot of other factors that go into that. I mean, Drew is a Title I school. It receives increased resources. I'm not as concerned about the free and reduced lunch numbers as I am about the involvement of the student body and the parents, which to me, you know, the school can be getting the resources it needs, but if you do not have the support of the parents and the community, that's a pretty steep hill to try to climb. So I think free and reduced lunch can be a hot button. I think parents tend to focus on that because that's one of the criteria they use to evaluate when they're looking at schools. But I think more so than that, we really need to look at each school holistically and what the composition of that school looks like.
Megan, the composition of the student body at your school, Patrick Henry, is something that many of the parents in the community fought for. And since Patrick Henry is closing and a new school is going to replace it this fall, Fleet, do you see that the student body there is going to reflect the diversity in the community in the same way?
In general, over the past 5 to 10 years, the composition of the school has been changing and it's becoming more of a high income school. It had been Title I up to, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. And we recently lost that Title I status. And we actually really enjoyed our diverse mix at Patrick Henry. We felt we had a good socioeconomic balance. And we have students that speak 20 different languages. We have a lot of different races and cultures. It's a nice mix. And it is a national blue ribbon winning school. From the state of Virginia. So it is academically performing at a very high rate as well. And so that's one thing. As we're moving to a newer, larger building at the Fleet Elementary School, we were hoping to kind of bring in more diversity into our school to kind of maintain that same mix. And that's not necessarily what is actually going to happen. And I did just kind of want to touch on what you were saying about the income levels. I just wanted to make the point that high-income families have, in general, more resources to support their schools generally. And I feel that concentrated poverty is bad for schools. I feel like we need to try to balance that with the community's desire for neighborhood schools. Currently, 8 out of 10 schools with above 30% free and reduced lunch in Arlington are in South Arlington. And they do receive staff resources based on the Title I standing, but they also have PTAs that raise far less money. Often there can be up to a $100,000 a year gap in PTA funding from one elementary school to another in Arlington County. And that money gets invested directly back into the student body or indirectly through, you know, staff or whatever. So I just think that there are disparities that are not necessarily being addressed by Title I funding.
We've got an email in from Beth who says, part of the problem in this process was that powerful groups of parents were very, very loud and the school board tended to overcapitulate. There were lots of issues of race, class, and gentrification that came up in this process. And if the board and the superintendent had acknowledged that more directly, it would have been helpful. Kathleen, how do you see that playing out? Do you feel that these issues were adequately addressed or that, you know, there is a divide forming?
I think the process was challenging going into it. I know the board and the board and the staff, you know, they had a tough job, and it was not, to our point earlier, not everyone was going to be happy with that. There were very vocal, very well mobilized, and to Megan's point, I think that's because those PTAs are heavily mobilized. They have a lot of resources, and this is the exact problem we're looking at. Drew Model, the school that a lot of parents maybe didn't want to send their kids to, they didn't have those resources. And that's the redistricting was looking to solve that exact problem, to increase both the resources, both, you know, whether it's through Title I, through the PTA, community involvement, to Drew Model, to make it a true neighborhood school. I felt as a Drew parent that was always a priority of the board going into it. I can't speak to whether or not they capitulated to other parents. I've been in all those meetings where people were very vocal. Of course they are. It's their children. I think I'll let Pat talk to more of the process of the board, but it was a difficult process. And if you were fortunate enough to have the resources of a well-run PTA, I think, you know, yeah, their voices were heard. But on the flip side of that, we were a very small contingent at Drew, and we felt our voices were heard. So,
and Megan, do you have any thoughts about that?
I just feel that in the case of Patrick Henry, the lower income planning units from our school south of Columbia Pike were actually the ones that ended up being moved to Drew. And so to me, this doesn't make a lot of sense. I feel like we're not helping Drew with their socioeconomic issues by sending lower income Patrick Henry students to that school. So we were hoping for a solution that made more sense in that regard.
How do you feel about this process, Pat?
Well, first I need to say everyone is extremely passionate, regardless of if you're in Arlington or at anywhere in our country, about the redistricting process. people form allegiances to their schools. They make very strong connections. And I think we all understand this. These decisions are not easy and they're not taken lightly. I think one of the things that staff did, and this is with the support of the board, is when you go through what I would say a transparent process, and you're also showing folks your work, and as you move forward, how all that thing that happens, it tends to become emotional. And so I think you're seeing a little bit of that playing itself out as far as making sure people were aware, making sure they were knowledgeable as we moved forward. The last thing I'll say is, you know, with the Drew community, it has been relatively small. It has been powerful, and we'll hear a little bit about that here in just a minute. But I also think that's kind of reflective of how we move forward with the transition. And I think we're already starting to mobilize with that, pulling people into that community and creating school community, which I think is important for all schools, but especially in this case, as Drew kind of reconfigures its neighborhood boundaries.
That's Dr. Patrick Murphy. He's a superintendent of Arlington Public Schools. But we'll have to say goodbye to Kathleen Coulombe. She's the vice president of communications for the Drew Model School PTA. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And Megan Haydaz, the former vice president of the Patrick Henry PTA. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Dan Reed of Greater Greater Washington, sitting in for Kojo Namdi. We're talking about redistricting in Arlington Public Schools. We've got a call from Anne in Arlington. Anne, are you there?
Yes. And I just want to say, first, thank you for everyone who appeared on the show. I know Superintendent Murphy has been taking some tough questions. But I also want to people in Arlington to know that, as far as I understand, there's a seat on the school board that is going to be open for voters to weigh in on this fall, and you can qualify to run for that seat up until June of this year. And so I would urge people to get heavily involved in running for their school board if they want, particularly from South Arlington, if they want to be more involved.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anne. We are joined now by Portia Clark, who is the president of the Nauk Civic Association, who's one of those South Arlington neighborhoods. Thank you for being here.
Okay.
And Tom Murray, the director of innovation for Future Ready Schools at the Alliance for Excellent Education. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Portia, your name came up repeatedly when we began planning for this show. Everyone told us we needed to speak to you about the history of school boundaries in South Arlington. First, could you tell us a little bit about the Nauk community and its history?
Nauk is a traditional African-American community with a history that goes back many years to Freedman's Village and beyond. This boundary change particularly was of interest to the community because it's the first time we were not required to be moved and bused. Our kids were bused for many years as a result of Drew desegregating back in 1971. So it's the community is no longer 85 to 95% African American. Today we're probably 34%. So it's a big shift in what we've had in the past, and this time we're looking forward to creating that true neighborhood school with this effort that's coming online in 2019.
So what does this latest round of redistricting mean for your community? Do you feel the overall outcome will be positive or negative?
Well, we're looking at many of the positives. We've got a new administrator that we're looking forward to, who's already doing some terrific things, looking at academic achievement levels of our kids. We're looking forward to our kids not being bused and moved all over the county in schools for no reason other than busing. So it's an opportunity that we have to fulfill some needs that we've had for many years where our kids have not achieved as well academically.
Tom, you have experience with redistricting as a teacher, principal, a district administrator, and now in your work with school districts all over the country. You say when it comes to redistricting, it's crucial that school boards take a holistic approach. What do you mean by that?
Sure. It's really important that districts have a long-term vision as it comes to this, and as the superintendent has alluded to. You know, I also have it as a father, so I completely understand when my five-year-old girl was looking up at me saying, "Daddy, I don't want to switch schools." I know that feeling there as well. But it's really important. At the Alliance for Excellent Education, our work really is around equity, and it's important that districts balance the need throughout their different schools, and equity is really core to that work there. And so when we take a look at it, we can't have 40 kindergartners in one school and seven in another, that we have to balance those resources. And we also know parents, you know, I've never heard a parent that says, "I really want to pay more and more taxes next year." So it's really, it's fiscally responsible. We need to do that. But also from the instructional programming, it's vital that we do that there as well.
Redistricting is more often than not a contentious issue for a community. Why is that?
It sure is, because when we look at it, we take a look at the mere exposure effect, and that means that people typically like what's closer to them. You know, ask the average American about their local elementary school. People speak really highly of it. They love it. Ask them about the district, and it goes down a little bit. Ask them about it nationally, and it's, wow, it's a debacle. But in their school, people love what they love. And what's interesting in redistricting, just like when I was that dad or when I was a principal on the other side doing it, people don't want to leave their school. That's a good thing, because they're creating inclusive environments where people want to be. Portia alluded to the fact of community schools and the importance of taking a look around whether it's race or socioeconomic status. And districts have to be really, really careful with that. But districts balancing the needs of the kids, because at the end of the day, that's why we're here. We're here to serve children. And that balance is key.
And you've said that when it comes to the debate surrounding redistricting, it's short-sighted to focus on the effect that it might have on property values and test scores. What do you mean by that?
I'd hesitate to say short-sighted in that regard, because as a taxpayer in my own community where we were redistricting, I understand it. But we really, as districts, need to think on the equity side about all children. And that, you know, as dad, I might focus on my daughter first and foremost. I get that, as all parents will. But when we step back, it's not just about my child. And districts really need to take that holistic view. You know, the property values are certainly one thing that we all care about in that regard. But in a situation like Arlington, people are coming here. People are moving. I work with district leaders across the country that have the opposite effect, where people are fleeing, and that's a whole other issue when it comes to this. But being a great district, folks are wanting to move in here. But there's many, many considerations, whether it's racially, whether it's socioeconomics or the instructional programming. There's so much to consider. And just looking at one facet of it is short-sighted in that regard.
And we've got an email from Stephen who says, "A lot of online forums and people I've talked to tend to land on the stark difference between North and South Arlington, a predominantly white area with a large percentage of homeownership versus a more diverse and lower income area with a large percentage of renters. At what point do we recognize that a lot of the animosity about redistricting has to do with preventing a more equitable school district for more marginalized communities in Arlington?" Portia, is that something that you've experienced, this divide that he describes between North and South Arlington?
Yes, there is a divide that's always existed, I think, all that I've known since I've been in Arlington. But I will say, I mean, we can't always pick where people will live. But one thing that NOC has valued itself on is NOC has been not so much a area with a lot of renters. We had a lot of individuals that bought their homes 30 years mm-hmm. ago, and many of them still live in their homes. They bought them to keep them, so their families are inheriting them. So it's not such a transient area as some other areas might be. We've only had two apartment complexes in NOC. So the renter issue is not so much a factor for us, but having a school that we can build our neighborhood around has been a challenge, because we couldn't get together for those informal socials with kids on one side of the street going North Arlington schools and the other side going South Arlington schools. So it's a challenge, but it's not so much today with us being as diverse as we are. And having a neighborhood school is a big component that will help to bridge some of those divides that we've had in the past. Now, North and South Arlington, we still live in South Arlington. We're still going to have some of those challenges.
Do you feel that the transition process has been meeting your community's needs?
Over the years, it has not, but we're looking forward with this effort, bridging that gap differently, in that we'll be in one elementary school. We transition to different middle schools and high schools, but at the same time, we're hoping to bring families closer together and increase the parent engagement and make sure our kids are succeeding academically.
Tom, do you feel there's a right way or a wrong way to do redistricting? What's the best way of managing a transition like this?
Well, I think you've heard from the superintendent on a lot of the things that they did do, and there is so much to consider. You know, you have to look at numbers across the board. You have to look at the financial components across the board, things like busing, so many different pieces. You want to protect and allow the instructional environments to thrive as much as possible. One of the best things we can do, and you know, when I went through it as a dad and with my little girl, is the principals play such a key role. And you heard from Portia early on, the pride in the administrator that she had in that process, you know, creating that inclusive environment for the new school and very inviting. I know the district where I lived, when we went through it as a family, they brought us on site. They had lots of meetings. They showed the great things that were happening. And again, going back to, nobody wants to leave their current school, but in the other school, especially here in Arlington, great things are happening across the board there as well. So the building trust, communicating, transparency are certainly right ways to do it. Regardless of where we look in terms of the scale, it's always going to be an emotional issue. People will always have that lens of how does it impact me? How does it impact my children? But at the end of the day, that trust and transparency is key throughout that process.
And one thing we haven't talked about is the educators' experience in redistricting. After all, those are their students too. What challenges does redistricting have for teachers in the classroom?
Sure. When you look at the redistricting piece, the instructional programming is such key. And you've heard the superintendent share that earlier. One of the things, you know, when you have to go through a redistricting process is what happens on the back end that you often don't see that districts go through, the sharing of data, the sharing of information. You know, when you have children for multiple years at a school, whether it's your guidance counseling services, your support staff that get to know those kids, obviously when you shake things up, that gets a bit disrupted. One of the things that I'm sure that Arlington's doing on the back end that you'll see educators that you may not see on the forefront, but educators spent countless hours doing, is working with the other schools so that the kids have the opportunity to be able to learn about the kids that are coming in, share about the kids that are leaving, to really protect that instructional programming.
We've got a call from Charles in Arlington, Virginia. Charles, you're on the line.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm calling just to address or ask a question about walkability. It seems like that was raised earlier by the superintendent, and specifically how important that is for Arlington. We're obviously a very urban and compact community. Walking is very important to a number of us. However, you know, the units that are now being moved from south of Columbia Pike, walking is going to be very difficult to get to Drew. And then not only that, but moving Patrick Henry, which was basically right in the middle of a district, easily walkable for pretty much parents all around the school, again, made no sense to put the school kind of in the northern, western corner of the district where it's, again, going to be much harder to sleep to walk to. Again, it just doesn't make any sense. So I'd just like the superintendent to address that, please.
Pat, what do you think? What's the county doing to address walkability at schools?
Well, I want to start out by saying one of the things that we did is we went out and we talked to folks and we wanted some input from them about what their what their interest was. We are challenged by our transportation and we have a growing bus fleet. So we look at all those opportunities that can present themselves as far as how we can make our schools more walkable. The other piece that hasn't played itself out here in today's discussion that I just want to make folks mindful of is while we designated a small area of the county to bring about the boundary changes that are going to be in place for the start of next school year, some of this is going to be cascading. So we're going to continue to need to address boundaries as we move through the next several years. And coupled with that, we're going to continue to see growth. So, we want to bring down cost. We want to look at efficiencies. One of the things is we don't want buses driving past schools where students may be able to walk to them. So, it doesn't fit together neatly like a nice package. But I think all those things were taken into, our thinking and our view and how we arrived where we are. But I think the other final piece of this, and I made mention of it, is this is going to continue to play itself out because we are growing and we're going to continue to add facilities.
Some of that growth might come from Amazon's HQ2, which will be coming to South Arlington. Has that been taken into account in the school's redistricting plans?
And that's a great question. And yes, it has been taken into consideration. You know, we look at projections 10 years out. We are continuing to see, though, that we are generating school-age children from single-family homes. So we're going to have to pay pretty close attention to the other types of homes that we have in the district. We also see about 15 to 20% of employees for a new company moving into the area that actually reside in Arlington. And I think at this point in time, because that growth is going to be slow, it's going to be over 12 years that they're going to gradually add those employees, that we'll be able to address that and accommodate for it.
Portia, how do you feel about the impending arrival of Amazon Toon in South Arlington, seeing all the changes your community has already had?
We're all waiting to see. We think a lot is going to happen with our housing as well as affordability in the school district. But until Amazon moves in, we don't really know what that impact will be. We get calls almost weekly asking us about the affordability. But when we look at the schools, until they select those employees and they move into the area, we won't know where they will be. I think Arlington offers a lot of choices. But if they end up in Nauk, I think we've got a school that can handle that capacity.
Tom, across the river in Montgomery County, there are plans to do redistricting of their own. If you could give your colleagues there one piece of advice, what would it be?
Absolutely. It's build as much trust in your community as possible. Continue to remain transparent. Emphasize and share that long-term vision, as well as making sure that we have inclusive communities throughout. And as the process goes, as we communicate and engage parents, help parents to feel like it's something they're a vital part of, not something that was done to them. But at the end of the day, regardless of that work, making sure that that vision is fulfilled through great opportunities for kids in every school and throughout the district.
This is our last question for Pat. What is one piece of advice you'd give in Montgomery County?
I think the key is the transition, and we're already seeing that happen with many of our school leaders and our parents and families coming together and really talking about what that transition will look like. I know we're short on time, but I got to tell you this story. I can't tell you the story.
Thank you for being here, Pat. Tom Murray, thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Portia Clark is the president of the Nauk Civic Association. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Our conversation on school redistricting was produced by Mona Cashvey, and our earlier update on Virginia politics was produced by Mark Gunnery. Coming up tomorrow, we'll sit down with Arlington County Board Chair Christian Dorsey to examine the trickle-down effects of Virginia's Democratic Party crisis. Plus, do you know what happens to your recycling? We'll examine how each local jurisdiction reduces, reuses, and recycles. Join us tomorrow at 12. I'm Dan Reed, sitting in for Kojo Namdi.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, and Margaret Barthel. Our managing producer is Angelisa Schrobstorff, and our senior producer is Mona Cashvey. Our intern is Sydney Grannon, and our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.